Hello and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Today is Friday, June 3rd, 2011, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about the upcoming Animal Rights National Conference. I don't know why, but I have trouble saying it that way. I feel like saying the National Animal Rights Conference.
I just call it the AR Conference.
Yeah, that probably makes more sense.
It is the AR conference.
But some of our listeners may not know what that means.
I definitely didn't know what it was about 6 months ago, but I've been planning and plotting, and
awesome.
I'm almost ready. So we'll be talking to Michael A. Weber from Farm USA, who's putting on the conference, and let you know all the details. So I thought it was a good time because it's July 21st to 25th, so you still have time to get yourself into it if you want. And it's in California. Who doesn't want to go to California in the summer?
And sit in a conference room all weekend.
Well, I guess Allison and I are, we're
they,
lucky
they
enough
have a swimming
that,
pool.
Oh, okay.
That's good. We're lucky enough that we're taking a couple weeks to go.
Yeah, so, how can you go to LA just to sit in a conference room exactly?
No, that was my problem. Yeah, no,
it's going to be a two-week trip for us, and it's going to be awesome, and we're going to do a lot of sightseeing and lots of animal stuff and vegan stuff. Can't wait.
Farm sanctuary?
Yeah. Totally, yeah.
Ooh,
farm sanctuary, San Francisco.
Okay.
Do you want to come?
I'm still considering.
And the highlight, the Price is Right.
Yeah.
Which I watched this morning to get practice in case I get picked.
You're going to the Price is Right.
That's you have to come now, right?
I don't know.
We'll also be talking to Tom Sayre of the Rivers Institute at BCIT about bear safety while camping. I know that living in Squamish, I'm definitely aware of all the bears that are out. And actually this morning, I left my house and was like, oh, my sunflower. I had a little sunflower just outside my door that somebody mauled last night. I don't know if it was a bear or a raccoon, but some sort of animal decided it didn't get to live.
Bears maul sunflowers?
They might. Maybe if he was hungry. I don't know.
Perhaps. Do they have, I mean, are the seeds ready in there?
I don't really know.
Are they tasty? I don't know.
But I do know that bears go through everybody's backyard in Squamish, so it's possible, and they're definitely out right now. So we'll be talking about that.
Good.
And then Allison has a review for us of Eco Pirate, the story of Paul Watson. She was lucky enough to get to go to the big event in Vancouver last week, I think. You know, it was completely sold out.
Yeah.
I wonder, was it the only sellout of the Projecting Change Festival, do you know?
Probably. I don't know.
It looked like it from the website.
Yeah, I bet it was.
So... yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Talk about
last Saturday I was lucky enough to get to participate in a Stop UBC Animal Research action at UBC. It was alumni weekend, and I counted about 25 people. There might have been a few more than that. People were kind of coming
That's
and going
right.
as they
I
needed
didn't
to
participate in my alumni weekend.
You
darn.
Didn't participate in either.
I know, because I was otherwise scheduled to do stuff. As I said, I would have been able to show up for 15 minutes. It was right by where I live. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Be there once again.
It was a good, I think we had a lot of impact. People were looking at us like, what's going on?
It was on. The biggest impact was that it was in the media big time.
I was talking to Brian Vincent, who's the director of Stop UBC Animal Research, last night, and he said that it's... I think it was in the top 20 news stories on Yahoo. The CBC coverage of it. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
And I hear that you were on the CBC as well.
I sure was.
Wow. I have to check that out.
I'm the sad looking person at the holding up the sign, the big banner.
Day of mourning.
Yes.
Well,
so, Allison?
Yeah, so as we were talking about, I went to see the screening of the new documentary film, Eco Pirate, the story of Paul Watson, last week as part of the Projecting Change Film Festival here in Vancouver. And to give you a taste of what you would have heard and seen had you been lucky enough to be there at the sold-out event, at least of what you would heard, here are some audio clips to start with.
The environmental movement is a war for the survival of humanity.
Paul Watson and his Sea Shepherd Society.
Paul Watson.
Paul Watson.
Captain Paul Watson.
The bad boy of the Canadian environmental movement.
I'll go to prison for as long as it takes.
These are a bunch of money-sucking manipulators.
If we're getting people annoyed, we're doing something right.
He's a professional radical ecologist.
What you'd call the Rambo of the environmental movement.
To many people, Paul Watson is simply a pirate on the high seas.
You only have vigilantes when there's an absence of law.
He was always the person who would go the farthest, be the most outrageous.
It's a world war, really, to save the whales.
I mean, you don't walk down the street and see a woman being raped and do nothing. You don't see a child being molested and do nothing. You don't see a kitten being stomped and do nothing. And you don't sit there and watch a whale die and take his picture and do nothing. And that's just cowardice.
Oh, my God. They did it?
People are going to get violent.
Paul was, like, out of control.
And it struck the Sierra full speed across the bow to damage the harpoon. Captain was trying to shoot at me.
Paul was voted off the board of Greenpeace Foundation.
The divorce from Greenpeace was a little bit messy, but I think in the end, it was exactly the right thing to happen. Paul went off and started the Sea Shepherd Society, and he got his own boat.
Greenpeace has just condemned you as a terrorist. What's your response? So I said, what do you expect from the Avon ladies in the environmental movement anyway?
This is the Farley Vault. We're no protest ship. Now get out of here.
If anybody thinks they're going to change the world through appealing to the morality of human beings, then, you know, they're not going to get very far. You never retreat. You never surrender. You just keep pushing. And if we destroy the oceans, as we're doing, and the oceans die, then it's quite simple. We die. No oceans, no civilization, no humanity.
So sounds impressive, doesn't it?
Wow.
So if you're still asking by now, who is Paul Watson? Well, he happens to be a hero in the animal rights world to many, a hero in the environmental conservation world to many, and a rogue rebel to those who he protests and fights against, be it the Canadian government, the Japanese whalers, or his past fellow Greenpeace allies, to name a few. Depending on whose side you're on, Captain Paul Watson, the founder and head of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, may be your friend or foe, and if he's your foe, you'd better watch out. Most of the footage for this film was shot over a period of the last 8 years, and the film itself is a biopic of the famous eco-warrior's life, telling the story of his early beginnings as a young activist and key player of the organization Greenpeace here in Vancouver in the 1960s and 70s, to that of a 60-year-old man who has since dedicated his life to the protection of marine wildlife, using aggressive tactics and often simple brute force to get his point across. I do admire and applaud what he does, because he's certainly acting outside of the proverbial box of confinement in favor of using direct action to get results made over simple protestation. And the actions that he commandeers never go as far to hurt anyone. In fact, he purposely stays away from that route. Now, while the film paints a picture of a courageous man with high ideals and amazing accomplishments coupled with world celebratory status, it does not make a point of glorifying him as a person. In fact, certain segments featuring those close to him, including his ex-wife and young daughter, speak of him in the same frank manner that he himself always projects, delivering critical and honest assessments of the man they see him to be. And I don't think Captain Watson would want anything less than that. Paul Watson doesn't care about what other people think. He says, "My clients are the animals." And that is because he has come to realize that humans are crazy, he says. And so he has chosen to fight for the animals and no one else. He puts his life on the line with such passion and fervor that most of us only watch from the safety of the sidelines instead of doing the same. He is ready to die in the ocean if that is what it comes to in his fight to protect the marine animals. This film presents a variety of unique archival footage that you will probably see nowhere else. Amazing and often painful scenery of the wildlife that the Sea Shepherd routinely encounters, and of course is threaded with Captain Paul Watson's eccentric and penetrating charm throughout. In summary, I highly recommend watching this film if you get a chance. As humans who take up a place on this earth among the animals and the oceans, we owe it to ourselves to become informed on the surrounding issues, and not only that, what the more motivated of our often complacent species are doing to right the wrongs that they see humans committing against the animals. So you really want to see the film now, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It sounds really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, I don't think it's actually playing anywhere yet. It's just making the film festival circuit, it seems like, which is great. It's definitely a film that you're going to want to watch out for, be it whether it comes out again in a theater or whether you get it on DVD. Whatever, this is a film to watch, as I said, for anyone who cares about what other people are doing for the animals, especially really strident actions such as his. So, yeah.
I wish I had been there, but I had a concert to go to, but I probably could have made it, because, yeah.
Oh, well, regrets won't get you anywhere, Chris. It was a sold-out show. And, you know, Captain Paul Watson was there, I should mention. That was the major highlight, probably the main reason why it was sold out. Everyone wanted to see him and meet him. And actually, Alex from EcoShock, who has a show on after us, got to meet with him and have a chat with him afterwards. And I think he's going to be featuring that on his show soon. Okay. So, yeah, maybe even today. So watch out for that. Paul Watson was there to do a Q&A from the audience afterwards. Actually, our own Carl Loskin, formerly of Animal Voices, asked a question. Now, what did he ask? I believe he asked a question regarding the seal hunt, if I'm not mistaken, which was the question I wanted to ask, be it that we're here in Canada, that affects us personally, and asking him what is happening with the seal hunt, you know, and basically Captain Watson said, well, we've chosen not to pursue trying to end the seal hunt anymore in Canada because it essentially is over. It's dying out. He says he doesn't think it's going to continue into next year. It's really a dying industry. It's killing itself, right? There's no seals left. There's no market. The European Union has banned and United States has banned the import of Canadian seal fur. It's just not happening. And, you know, that was, he's such an expert on everything that's happening in those areas there. It was great just to even hear him sort of solidify what we sort of know already. You know, it's been being said in the news and that, and that was definitely his take on it.
That's great. Thank you for that, Allison.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What the Folk brings you the very best in world, folk, roots, and new music. Tune in every Sunday.
Animal Voices celebrates the glory of the animal kingdom.
But the rise of factory farming of animals
So we have a little problem there with our PRAs. I'll play another one after. How about after the news?
So yeah, I have a bit of international news today. And of course, you're listening to 102.7 FM in Vancouver. This is Cooperative Radio. And this is the Animal Voices show. So one of the worst cases of animal cruelty ever, pretty much, that I've heard, and I think maybe any of us has heard, in Malta, a dog was found buried alive, covered with a board, with just her face sticking out, her snout wired up. A passerby heard her whimpering.
Oh.
When she was exhumed, she was found to be tied up with shoelaces. Doctors removed 40 pellets, mostly from her head. She's recovering well now, actually, amazingly.
That's amazing that she was even alive at all.
I don't really understand, why wasn't she fully buried? Like, if the intent was to hurt her that much, I don't really understand. She's understandably traumatized right now. But what's impressive about this is, of course, the huge public outcry. People are understandably outraged. There's almost 50,000 fans on the Facebook page now, and this was just like a few days ago, like earlier this week. They named her Star, I guess, because she's receiving so much attention. On Facebook, you can find her at Star, the dog who lived. And the perpetrator is still at large. And this is really bringing attention to the animal welfare penalties in Malta right now. Currently, Malta's kind of off the boot of Italy in the Mediterranean. Currently, there's a maximum jail sentence of 1 year and a fine of 46,000 euros. I think on the table there's legislation to raise the fine to 50,000 euros, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think that that's... I don't know what that equates to. No, not really. Anyway, kind of sad, but exciting that, you know, she lived, and it's good to hear stories of survivors anyway, and I hope that they find the person who did that.
Yeah.
And then elsewhere in the world, Now to Australia. Earlier this week, a nationally syndicated Australian current affairs program featured graphic video footage of brutal treatment of Indonesian slaughterhouses. Australia is the world's number one live animal exporter, and they're looking at banning the sale of cattle and sheep to Indonesia, where 60% of their exports are destined. This is pretty amazing public
outcry that they would even consider 60% of their exports if they're the biggest exporter in the world.
It's a huge industry. Obviously, there's a lot of people against the ban of it, I think most of the public outcry and a lot of the politicians as well think that it would be a good idea. So pretty much right after the story aired, the export was banned to the 11 facilities that were featured in the documentary.
Wow.
I know, it's pretty amazing. So basically what people were reacting to is that there's no regulations over mm-hmm. there, and animals were shown to die long, agonizing deaths after being whipped and beaten. Their eyes were often gouged out.
Ew.
And, you know, there's no stunning over there. It's just multiple stabbings, you know, just kind of bleeding them to death. It's pretty horrific. And some veteran politicians are saying that they've never experienced such a massive outcry on a single issue. So it's pretty interesting, like, just how much people are, I think, aware of animal suffering these days.
Well, and as well to take a look at if everybody does speak up when you see something that's wrong in terms of animal welfare, it's obviously having an effect with the politicians, right?
Yep. I think one of the campaign was actually really well done. It was the Animals Australia in conjunction with the RSPCA, which is the Royal SPCA, which you can find more information on the videos and the campaign at rspca.org.au. They featured individual stories instead of, you know, just mm-hmm. talking about the millions of cattle mostly exported. They talked about Arthur, Dudley, Bill, Brian, and Tommy, just like individual stories of these animals that, you know, they couldn't save, but that lived, just really had really traumatic experiences that were captured on video. And of course, here in Canada and the US and the UK and Australia and lots of countries, there's humane slaughter regulations which stipulate the animals must be stunned prior to slaughter to render them unconscious. How successful that stunning is, you know, up for debate, really, but I guess at least it's something. And so hopefully, I guess they're talking about, you know, training them better in Indonesia mm-hmm. To meet slaughter standards or something. But I think it's, you know, really important that groups continue to bring things like this to mass attention, and I hope their campaign keeps rolling ahead. It's pretty interesting how massive the outcry has been.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Alyssa.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Just a reminder to our listeners that this is 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and you're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show. And with us on the line now, we have Tom Sayre of the Rivers Institute at BCIT to talk to us about how to keep bear safe this summer when you're out and about in BC's forests, because the bears are definitely out there. Hello, Tom.
Good afternoon.
Hello, welcome. Can you tell us approximately how many fatal bear encounters there are every year?
Oh, generally it is very, very low, mm-hmm. and on average, about one per year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one per year, where exactly?
It can vary over North America.
Okay. Last year, that's not a lot.
Yeah. No, last year, for example, we had two fatal bear attacks, both as a result of meeting up with grizzlies, and both were in, well, I believe the one was in northern Wyoming, the other was in Montana.
All right.
So those are the two fatal ones for 2010, and so far this year we've only had, you know, we've had a few minor, well, we've had about five attacks that I'm aware of. One was a fairly major one in Alaska. The other four were relatively minor attacks.
Okay. So how often would you say that people come into contact with bears in the forest? Is it a pretty frequent thing, or?
Bear encounters can be relatively frequent, particularly, you know, living in a province like British Columbia, you know, mm-hmm. where we have both species. We have black bear and we have grizzly bear. You know, we were looking at a population of black bear at about 140,000 to 160,000 within the province. So, you know, your chances are pretty good, at least, of having an encounter. And generally, that's all it ever turns out to be. You know, you come up in close proximity to a bear, and generally they hustle out of the area fairly quickly.
Okay, and Allison and I were talking last night about bears, and she was just sort of wondering, I don't know, do you want to ask the question about how to sort of, which you're supposed to react?
I had several questions. Okay, so when, I come from North Vancouver Island, big bear country,
sure.
which I was actually just there a few weeks ago, saw three bears on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so when we were young in elementary school, we had classes on to tell us what to do when we encountered bears. They actually would come into the elementary school property. And we were told that when you see a grizzly bear, you're supposed to act in a certain way. And when you see a black bear, I believe it was, the other type of bear, you're supposed to act in a certain way. One way is you're supposed to act aggressive and like shout and yell, try to scare them away. The other way, roll up in a ball. Now, I always could never remember which was which as to what you're supposed to do. And in the face of such a situation where you're probably panicking, it's probably not good that I didn't know that. Can you perhaps sure. give us some tips and how to even remember what to do?
Sure. Well, you know, whether it be a black bear or a grizzly bear will be dependent upon what behavior that bear is exhibiting.
Okay.
So if, and both bears can exhibit, say, a defensive behavior, so if you've surprised them, they'll show signs of being stressed, and that could be mm-hmm. just simple things like a yawn, or it could be even something more aggressive, you know, like a swat or you know, even the jaw popping, classic jaw popping, that sort of thing. So both species will exhibit that if they're stressed. So in that case, you're generally going to behave or act or respond the same way, you know, to both those types of situations. Where you are going to change your strategy is if it ends up being, say, more predatory in nature. And that's where the bear may actually be stalking you. The bear may be just, and generally it's not going to show any of the signs of those stresses. It's going to be very quiet, very intent, say, walking towards you, that sort of thing. In a case like that, you're going to act a lot more aggressive. To try to deter the bear and give it second thoughts of trying to take you on as prey or whatever. So in a defensive situation, you want to act calm. Stay calm. Basically assess the situation and try to determine what is that bear telling you, what type of behavior is exhibiting. And at that point, stand still and most importantly, don't run. And then at that point, speak calmly and, you know, and then try to slowly back away from the animal.
Is running going to make the bear run after you?
It could. Yeah, you know, when you think about, I like to use the example of, you know, if you have an aggressive dog, for example, and you were to run from it, sometimes that can trigger that chase instinct. And that's the same as, you know, with a bear, for example, as well, too. So, and not only that, but, you know, if you try running and that bear does chase you, it's going to outrun you. You know, bears can run as fast as 50 kilometers an hour in short spurts. Wow.
So unless you can run faster than 50 kilometers an
that's
hour,
right.
do not try
that's
to run.
Right.
I don't think that's very many people.
No. So running is not a good idea. But like I say, in a defensive situation, you want to, you know, just act calmly and try to, you know, get yourself out of there. You want to talk to the bear in a very calm voice and just back out of the situation. As opposed, again, to a predatory situation, that's where you are going to act aggressively. Shout at the bear. Stomp your feet, that sort of thing. Anything that will kind of deter that bear and, you know, from, you know, you want to be the aggressor in this kind of situation.
Is it a bad idea to throw things at the bear?
No. In a predatory situation, no. You know, you could throw rocks at it or whatever. You know, you're going to have to try to do whatever you can mm-hmm. to make that bear think twice about taking you on.
So is it generally people doing the wrong thing that does sort of incite a bear attack?
Generally, doing the wrong thing could be, you know, when you're outdoors, for example, and if you're hiking, you know, not being aware of your surroundings, not making noise in the area, and then so consequently you surprise a bear. And where it can be a dangerous situation, particularly, say, for example, with grizzlies, mm-hmm. if you come across a grizzly sow with cubs, a grizzly will get grizzly sow will get very, very defensive, and that's where people can get into trouble. Or coming across a grizzly, for example, that might be on a carcass. It's going to defend that food, you know, vehemently. For black bears, generally, it's, you know, again, just surprising them. And, you know, they tend to be the more timid of the two bears. And in most cases, you know, from my experiences anyways, they've generally cleared the area fairly quickly. But sometimes, you know, they can become defensive and, you know, it can end up in some cases being a bluff charge and in some cases, you know, resulting in contact as well.
Is it as dangerous with a black bear with cubs as with a grizzly bear, or not as much of an issue?
Not as much of an issue. And in fact, there was a paper just recently put out by Stephen Herrero and some of his colleagues where they looked at fatal attacks by American black bears from 1900 to 2009. And they actually found that, in fact, black bear sows with cubs weren't as dangerous as, for example, as the male black bears in some of these cases.
Oh.
So, but definitely female, you know, grizzlies with cubs, it can be a very, very dangerous situation.
Because I've seen, there's a family of bears. I've seen a mother and her two cubs a lot on along the highway. I live in Squamish, so on the Sea to Sky Highway, and during the long weekend, there were about 20 people that were stopped and taking pictures because the bear was so close to the road, probably like, I don't know, 100 feet off the road. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are people doing?
Yeah.
But I guess it's not as much of a worry, but it's still a worry that they get, you know, acclimatized to humans.
That's right, and you're still inviting trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not to say that the sow, you know, might not get defensive and then try charging somebody to protect your cubs.
Yeah.
But it does, in the end result, it does habituate that bear to human beings, where the bears all of a sudden, you know, don't become as fearful of them, and then that's when troubles can begin.
Yeah, and
know?
It's usually for the bear. It's usually the
Absolutely.
Bear ends up being destroyed after
Absolutely.
So many encounters with humans.
Yep. Yeah.
And just, we're almost out of time here, but can you just sort of tell us what are the main things that people do need to keep in mind when they're out hiking or camping?
Main thing is to, when you go into an area, find out from the locals or from the authorities, you know, have there been any bear sightings in the area, any problems, that sort of thing. And then, you know, it's always a good idea to carry bear spray and absolutely know how to use it. When you're out there, be alert, you know, particularly in densely forested areas, make lots of noise, and keep an eye open for bear signs such as scat and tracks. And it's always a good idea to travel in a group. Also keep children close at hand, and as well, keep dogs leashed or at least under control. But just, you know, being alert, using your brain when you're out there and making lots of noise is generally a fairly good deterrent from keeping yourself from getting in trouble with bears.
And realize that there's others out there than just us silly humans.
Sure.
Yep.
That's right. Remember,
just
you're
be aware.
That's right. And remember, you're in the bear's home as well.
Yeah.
Too, you know.
Which has to do with territorial standings as well, too.
I think it's just like you would in any, if you go into somebody else's home, you know, you want to respect, you respect their home, and it's the same thing when you're out in the backcountry or along the trails. You want to respect as being, you know, wildlife's home as well, too.
Is a bear bell effective enough at making enough noise?
It can be. You know, you probably would want something a little bit louder, and that's where the occasional shouting out or whatever would probably be a lot more effective.
Okay.
Not to say that bear bells won't work, but, you know, if you get near streams or if you've got strong winds and that sort of thing, you know, the sound won't carry as well as some other, you know, methods. Even sometimes, although they can be a little obtrusive, but using even things like the occasional blast from a small air horn or something like that can also...
That's what I said, an air horn.
Yeah, and they've got, I think there are some marine air horns now that are actually, the canisters are refillable with simple bicycle pumps, so they can be reused over and over again as well, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Tom. I think now we can stay a bit safer.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Animal Voices celebrates the glory of the animal kingdom.
But the rise of factory farming of animals has created an appalling situation, so that every hour in Canada, some 56,000 animals are killed for meat. They were mostly raised in inhumane conditions.
Your tax dollars fund government policies and programs that promote industrial livestock production, that puts family farmers out of business and wreaks havoc on the environment.
If you feel that all animals are sentient beings, that feel pain and are capable of loving and being loved, this program is for you.
Animal Voices, Fridays at noon, Mondays at 4 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
Fun little musical interlude, wasn't it? Yeah, fun. I was dancing during that. So I have our Animal Voices events on Wednesday evenings until the end of the summer, starting at 7:30 p.m. There will be a Focus on Food film series presented by the Unitarian Church of Vancouver. We had Denise Swanson on the show last week, actually, who is organizing these film events. She was speaking about them on the show. So I just wanted to announce again, reiterate what the films are. And it takes place at 949 West 49th Avenue in Vancouver at the Unitarian Church. And the films that will be on starting next week, June the 8th, we will have The Emotional World of Farm Animals. On June the 15th will be A Cow at My Table. June the 22nd, Mad Cowboy, the documentary. And June the 29th is not an animal rights movie, but it's a food movie. It's called Dirt, the movie. So those are some films that you might want to check out. And if you want to hear more about them, because Denise gave her animal rights film recommendations on the show last week, do check out our show on the web on our website from last week. That was May 27th. Coming up this Sunday, June the 5th, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., is the Love Vancouver, Love Your Planet Festival, taking place at the Olympic Village in Vancouver. Love Vancouver, Love Your Planet is a green art, music, and culture festival that comes alive this June the 5th in the Olympic Village along the seawall in False Creek. This festival celebrates and encourages Vancouverites to build a more sustainable future for the city by bringing communities together to share ideas and to celebrate innovation. Now, the reason I do mention it is because there will be vegetarian food vendors there, organic, green technology showcase, an eco market. It sounds interesting. Chris, I believe you're going to be there, right?
Love Vancouver?
Yes.
Yes, I am. You'll see me under Earth Save.
Yeah. So if you want to meet Carissa.
Or if you want to volunteer with me, I'm going to be the only one so far.
Okay. So for more information, you can go to lovevancouverfest.com. And I think I'll just talk about one more very quickly. We wanted to talk about the Animal Rights Conference again coming up on July the 21st to the 25th. It's going to be in Los Angeles. And so we've got the Animal Rights Conference in LA, and as we were talking about it before, it's got lots of speakers and lots of delicious vegan food and lots of awesome workshops that you can attend. The AIR conference is a forum for sharing knowledge, reporting on progress, discussing strategies and tactics, networking, and recharging our batteries as people who are interested in acting for the animals. So if you're interested in going to the conference, you can still register. It's $140 at this point, and you just go to airconference.org. And you can register there. There's still time. Happens in July, and I highly recommend it. So if you have an animal or a vegetarian-related event that you want to have played on the air here, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
And on the line with us now, we have Michael Weber from Farm USA to talk to us more about the conference that Allison was just talking about. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great. So how many years has the Animal Rights National Conference been taking place?
It ran on and off between 1981 and 2000, and it has run every year since then. It's been alternating from East and West Coast since 2003. So it now is in Washington, D.C. on the even years and in Los Angeles, California on the odd years.
And does that model work really well, do you find?
Switching yes, it does. You know, yeah, it works very well. Of course, we have some regulars that come to both, you know, to the ones on mm-hmm. both sides each year because they learn new things each year. But, of course, there's other people who it's more affordable for them to just make the one that's closer to them. And so it works out very well.
Like us we get here a wider, in Vancouver.
A wider spread of... What's that?
Like us here in Vancouver, I was saying.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it works well for both mm-hmm. people who live in the U.S. and for people in Canada. Of course, mm-hmm. we have, yeah, people from British Columbia come to one, and people from the other, you know, from the other side come to the other. So yeah, it works out well.
So what will people find at the Animal Rights National Conference?
They'll find basically anything related to animal rights. Of course, there's a whole host of speakers. There's almost 100 workshops. There are fun networking receptions. There's a bunch of vegan food. There are films and videos being screened. There's regional, you know, events for, you know, to meet up with people in your area. So there's just a, you know, anything you can think of that you'd have at a, you know, an event like this. There's exhibiting booths, you know, vegan shopping. Basically anything you can think of related to veganism and animal rights is at the conference in some capacity.
Buy all your t-shirts at the AR conference is my recommendation.
That's what I'm waiting
exactly.
for.
Save yourself on some shipping, right?
Yeah. You know, just, and just books, get it all too. At once. There's so much there. It's awesome.
As long as you're not flying back, right? With the weight restrictions.
You got to come with an empty suitcase.
Well, we give you the conference tote bag, right?
Oh, so
you
got
a little shopping
true.
Bag just to fill up.
That's clever. You mentioned that there's, I think you said, about 100 workshops. Are there repeats of the workshops so that you can sort of go to the ones that you really want to go to, or do you have to try to make a decision?
Most of the workshops are just held once each. Some of the topics are covered in two different varieties. So, for instance, there will be one topic will be introduced at one of the evening plenary sessions, which are the ones where the whole conference is in one room at mm-hmm. once. And then the next day there will be a wrap session, which are the everyone discussion sessions where there's no presenter, it's just everyone talking. Okay. There will be a wrap session on that same topic. So you kind of hear the experts say their stance on something one night, and then the next day you all get to discuss it with a moderator to moderate your discussion. So. Okay.
And how many speakers will there be at this year's conference?
We have the most speakers we've ever had. We have almost 100 speakers this year. There's a whole host of them. You know, the animal intelligence specialist Mark Beekhoff, the award-winning journalist Will Potter, animal rights film producer Shannon Keith, the authors Melanie Joy and Colleen Patrick Goodrow, and then, of course, a whole bunch of movement leaders such as Gene Bauer, Erica Meyer, Bruce Friedrich, Alex Hirschaft, Nathan Runkel. It just, you know, it goes on. There again, about 100 speakers going to be there.
And what I read for this year is that there's going to be a lot of brand new speakers that we've never seen before at the AR conference, or not at least in recent years, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah. There's one thing that we really pride ourselves on this conference is, of course, we do have, you know, big names and top leaders, but we also like the conference to be a forum for people to gain recognition, for their organizations to gain recognition. So oftentimes someone's first national speaking gig will be our conference, and it's someone who, you know, we've read their credentials and we know that they're going to be a great fit for the conference, but they've actually never, you know, previously spoken at a forum like this. So, you know, this is a great, you know, it's a great venue, not just for the big shots, but for people who are up and coming as well.
Wow, that's a great opportunity for people. Are there more speakers this year because, like, veganism and animal rights are hitting the media so much, do you think? Is that why you were able to get more?
I think that could be part of it. I think that the biggest reason is that there are so many more people doing so much good work, and when they heard that we have this open invite to submit, your own topics, and we'll see who we can fit in. You know, I think we got more submissions than we're used to, and unfortunately, we still had to turn some great ones down, especially if it was on repeat, you know, if it was a similar topic that was already being presented. But when we saw new topics we'd never had before, we said, oh, even though we have a full program, we've got to find room for this, and then, you know, got to find room so many times, turned into a really huge, you know, huge packed program, so.
Yeah. So with regards to the workshops, can you tell us maybe what some of them are going to be?
Yeah, I mean, again, there are so many, it's difficult to pick, you know, to pick just a few, but for newcomers, a really good one is there's the newcomer orientations. There's two of those, one on Friday morning and then a different one on Saturday morning. And also for newcomers, there's the choosing a career session. And then some of the staples that we have every year, because they're always so important, are the ones on winning hearts and minds, speaking our message, advertising our message, engaging different groups. So we've got engaging the media, engaging people of religion, engaging youth, engaging businesses. So those are all kind of staples that we make sure to have every year, because they're, you know, consistently so important for everyone in the movement to know how to do those. And then we do have some new ones. One that I'm really excited about is we've got a hands-on animal rescue training workshop.
Oh, where wow.
That's awesome. I'm excited about that, too.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. So,
does that include animal CPR at all?
I don't believe that was something that was specifically mentioned. What it's going to be is it's led by the people who run the new group Animal Rescue Corps. Which is based out of Los Angeles and based out of the Washington D.C. area, and I think they also have some folks in the middle of the U.S. also. But they're going to be leading a workshop that uses like props, like fake animals, and showing how to if you see an injured animal or a stray animal, you know, how you can effectively handle this animal without either hurting the animal or hurting yourself, and, you know, how you can effectively get that animal, you know, put into your vehicle and then taken to the, you know, the proper place, depending if it's a disaster relief or if it's an emergency vet they need, or if they need to go to a, you know, to a no-kill shelter, you know, kind of showing the different ways to get, you know, to rescue an animal, and then letting you know the different places to take that animal if needed. So
I've always wanted to take a workshop like that, and now I'm going to get to. So thank you for organizing that. That's great.
Oh yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's definitely something to look forward to. What kind of extracurricular activities are there going to be?
Well, there's the networking receptions are every evening, so those have free vegan food, which are donated by vegan food manufacturers and by our product sponsors, and so they are going to be giving free food for all the networking receptions. We've got, we're endorsing on the Wednesday before the conference, there's a large circus protest, which is hoped to be largest circus protest ever in this country. And we've endorsed that event, and we're allowing it, you know, it's not put on by us, but we're tying it to the conference, hoping that our attendees will show up one day early and, you know, make it out to this protest. And then on Monday, there is a vivisection protest led by Stop Animal Exploitation Now, and there's also a lobbying event happening on Monday. So there are several what you would call extracurricular activities.
That's great.
And then there are also lunchtime activities, such as the Lunch with the Movement Authors, and that's like a book signing and question and answer session with some of the prominent authors in the movement. And there's a different day, there's Lunch with Movement Leaders, and that's where some of the leaders of our sponsoring organizations, same thing, are there for like a meet and greet. So,
speaking of lunch, that's one of my favorite parts of the conference, because the hotel always does an awesome vegan buffet and fairly well priced. So I just want to point that out. And dinner as well, right? So great food there.
We offer free breakfast also from our food donors. So there's a free breakfast every morning that we offer.
That.
And then the hotel does the breakfast, or sorry, the lunch and the dinner. And then, of course, on Saturday, there's the awards banquet, which is kind of the classier dinner that the hotel puts on for us. And that's where we have the awards given out to activists and sometimes to celebrities. So,
and speaking of celebrities, are there any big vegan celebrities that are going to be in attendance that you can let us in on the scoop?
Yeah, well, we're still finalizing some of this, so I can't, you know, I can't let all of it on now. But we did just get confirmation that the vegan co-creator of The Simpsons, Sam Simon, is going to be not just that, he'll actually be speaking on a panel on Saturday morning about the work he does rescuing stray dogs and spaying and neutering, as well as a brand new program he just launched, which is a vegan food relief program. So he gives homeless families and their pets vegan food, and that's something that he funds. So he'll be speaking on that. So that's something that we're very excited about.
I'm so excited, too. It seems like there's going to just be so many, you know, I've been, I think, 2 times now, and both times in L.A., right? So being my 3rd time, it seems like there's just going to be so much new stuff to look forward to. And I would go anyways if it was the same, just to meet the people and the networking, which is actually a large part of the conference that shouldn't be overlooked. But just to have all these new and different, you know, forums and workshops and that, I'm very excited.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, of course, we've got to, you know, we keep the stuff that works every year, and then we always add in new ideas, too, to make sure it remains fresh for folks who have been
at the time. Yeah, the thing, too, about having some of the staples, as you said, every year is that you get to go to the ones that you didn't have time to the year before, because there's usually, like, 3 different things going on at once, and you have to choose one, right? So that's also a great reason to keep going year after year.
Yeah, well, and of course, yeah, that is definitely a really good, you know, really good reason to have some repeats. Now, we do our best to minimize people's need for overlap because we have conference tracks. So there's a track on learning the issues, there's a track on organizing, there is the track that is the wrap sessions, which are the discussion sessions. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that hopefully, you know, the newcomers can kind of stay on the learning the issues track and they won't be, you know, of course, we all want to go to everything, but we definitely do our best to make sure that 2 issues or that 2 sessions of really similar interest aren't going on at the same time, you know, so that people, again, of course, we all have to pick, but we try to minimize how much agonizing, you know, decision has to be made. So,
is there any one bit of positive feedback you've gotten in past years from an attendee that stuck with you that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, actually, there is. We get a lot of feedback every year, of course, and it's, you know, basically all extremely positive, but we had one last year that still actually gives me shivers every time I read it. It's so inspiring. She said, "I'll never be the same after the AR conference. It was the most meaningful and impactful experience of my life. Prior to attending the conference, I was in coasting mode, uncertain of what to do next. Now my imagination is soaring with ideas, most of which came from listening to the many people that I met at the conference. I thought I was dedicated to helping animals, but I had no idea the meaning of dedication prior to attending AR 2010.
Wow.
That's a great comment, and I have to say that's true, is that it's such a motivating and inspirational event to attend. So for people that are perhaps, you know, interested in animal issues but not yet as fully active as they even thought they could be, this is something that's going to spearhead you in that direction. And, you know, the more animal activists we have out there, the better for the animals.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what we aim to do is help transform people who are just interested in the issues into activists, and help transform people who are already activists into leaders and highly effective activists, you know. So no matter where you are on the scale, if you're brand new, if you're, you know, kind of in between, or if you're a seasoned activist, there's still always, you know, we can all become more effective in what we do. So we've got a whole realm of, you know, skills for people at any level to make sure that we can all, you know, keep learning something.
I'm curious, for people who are maybe listening right now and are just new to the movement or aren't even in the movement, maybe don't know anyone that's going to the conference, what would you say to them about the conference and whether, like, if they're trying to make a decision as to whether or not to go, and maybe they don't have someone to go with the way that we're going together?
Yeah. Well, if it's about not having someone to go with, you know, like you said earlier, one of the best things about the conference are these networking opportunities. And we, especially if someone's coming from the U.S. or Canada, you know, we've got these regional lunches and these regional activities where people can meet people from their areas. We've got these networking receptions every evening. where people can meet people. We have speakers on every single issue relating to animals, you know, speakers about farmed animals, about animals used in labs, about companion animals, you know, cats and dogs, about animals abused in circuses and rodeos, and about animals, you know, in free roaming in the wild who are facing, you know, a threat from humans. So regardless of what someone's main issue is, you know, if you're there primarily for one cause or the other, you know, I personally work on farmed animal issues, and so I definitely devote most of my energies towards learning more about that. So if someone only has one bend, there's plenty for them. But then also we can all, you know, it's all connected, so it's always great to learn more about everything. So I really do think that for newcomers, whether they're new to the movement as a whole or whether they're new to their one niche, the conference has a perfect, you know, blend of all the issues to make sure that you can learn a little bit about everything, but also learn more about the one that's most important to you. So I think that's the main reason that this conference is so beneficial for newcomers.
And I just want to maybe also speak to maybe people who are listening that aren't vegan or maybe aren't even vegetarian but are starting to think about it. Would you say that this is a good place to start?
Yeah, it is. Well, for one, you get to try all this vegan food. So if you're not vegan or vegetarian, you know, it's a great place to it's a great way to, you know, to get your, you know, to kind of get your feet wet, so to speak, when it comes to that. And we don't, you know, it's not just vegans and vegetarians that attend. We take a poll every year after the conference to see what people's diets were going into the conference and what their diets are leaving the conference. And of the people that responded last year, I do have to say, if there's a vegetarian or vegan who's coming and their intention is to not leave a vegetarian or vegan, it's unlikely. Not because we are put any pressure, but because I think it's impossible to hear about all these issues and to be surrounded by so many intelligent, warm, caring, fun people who are vegetarians and vegans and not be compelled. And last year that was the case. After the conference, of the people that responded to the poll, not a single person said they still ate meat anymore.
Wow.
So, and that's not, of course, the intention of this conference. Yeah. The intention is primarily to you know, create effective advocates. But even if someone comes because they care about the circus, again, when you're around so many fun and, you know, kind of delightful people who are vegans and you're trying all this vegan food, you know, you realize how easy and fun it is to, you know, to take that step as well.
Definitely. Don't want to scare the meat eaters out of going because you'll be vegan at the end, but definitely come and see what it's like, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's what I said. We don't pressure anyone. Yeah. It just seems to be the natural reaction, you know, when, you know, because of the warm environment that we provide. You know, by warm, I mean, you know, there's air conditioning, of course, but the feeling of the conference is just kind of so jovial.
There's lots of dogs there. That's what I like about it.
yeah. Well, the hotel specifically allows for dogs. You're allowed to have your dog in your hotel room.
Yeah. And in the workshop, even if they're, you know, well-behaved, they just sit under your seat.
Yeah.
I enjoy looking at the dogs and petting them.
We're almost out of time here, but is there a place for people to coordinate plans for getting to the conference as well as rooming at the conference?
Yes, there is. We have a message board for people to try to arrange travel share together and to arrange room shares together. That is available on our website under the travel tab. There's
So
if you're at arconference.org /travel, you'll be able to get to this message board that we have available. And we also, for people in the state of California, we've provided a San Diego bus package and a San Francisco bus package. So we actually have ways for those folks to get there. And then we also offer a room share that we coordinate for only $25 per person per night. And that's just sharing floor space, like cot space, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's not the single nicest accommodations, but it's very discounted. And that's something that, you know, that we provide to make sure that, you know, anyone from any economic, you know, background can still, you know, enjoy the full benefits of the conference.
And is registration still open?
Yeah, it's open right till the end of the... There's no cutoff date. You can register on site. There's a discount, of course, for registering online. And also, bringing up discounts again, if someone is low income,
Michael? Oh, I think his call just dropped. Well, we're actually all out of time, so unfortunately we won't be able to finish that. Maybe we can get him to email us the rest of that, and we can put it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Anyways, you are listening to the Animal Voices show here on 102.7 CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I just want to talk about a little bit about what you can expect to hear on the show next week. This weekend, I'm going to be attending an Introduction to Raw course at the Raw Food Foundation in Vancouver, and I'll be giving a review of that. And I'll also be interviewing Janice Goreko, who is a nutritionist and the founder of the Raw Foundation. This is something I've been wanting to do an interview about for a long time, because we do talk about vegan nutrition on the show. So how about raw vegan nutrition? And she's going to speak to us about that and what I call uncooking, because I don't really cook, and the benefits of the raw lifestyle. So our website is animalvoices.org. Please go on there and you can check out past shows that we've had. All of our past shows are there. You can download them. You can also find download links and actually just play directly our shows from our Facebook page. So that's Animal Voices Vancouver if you want to look up our Facebook group there. You can email us with any comments and suggestions at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We have Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. Anything else? Anything else?
No.
Just don't call us, because we don't answer the phone. That's all we ask. But we have many, many ways for you to get in touch with us and to let us know how we're doing, any suggestions of any interviews or topics that you'd like to have on the show, anything like that. I also want to mention that we did play a PRA earlier in the show that was for the Animal Voices show, and it mentioned that the show's on Mondays at 4 p.m. That used to be the case, but not anymore. We used to rerun the show on Mondays, so we will be making a new announcement, PRA, in the future, so just disregard that. But you can always hear the shows online, so if you miss them live, they're online. Also on directly online via streaming, cooperadio.org. So to conclude our show, we have a song here that is, it's called Land of the Silver Birch by Michael Mitchell. Did you want to say anything about this
song? Just the reason is because we were talking about bear safety and camping earlier, and this is sort of what I think of, a song that I used to sing, I think, in brownies when I was a kid. So, yeah.
My paddle's keen and bright, flashing with silver. Follow the water's flight, dip, dip and swing. Dip, dip and swing her back, flashing with silver. Swift as the wild goose flies, dip, dip and swing. Land of the silver birch, home of the beaver, where still the mighty moose wanders at will. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom. High on a rocky ledge, I'll build my wigwam, close to the water's edge, silent and still. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Swing diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom. Swing. My heart grows sick for thee here in the lowlands. I will return to thee, hills of the north. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Swing diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, swing. Land of the silver bird, mighty moose wanders as will. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Swim diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, swim.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Hello, I'm Alex Smith. For the coming months, we added dozens of new college and community radio stations to this broadcast, at least 50 more stations. As you may know, Daphne Wisham and her Earthbeat radio crew are taking a break while they reorganize. Even while off duty, the reporter in Daphne never takes a break. Later in this program, you'll hear her on-the-spot recording from a tornado-ripped town in the hill country of Virginia. It's reality radio with a vision of what we can expect in the coming climate-damaged world. But we'll start with our feature interview. David Lochbaum is an American nuclear engineer, whistleblower, and expert for the Union of Concerned Scientists. Lochbaum warns reactor design and unreliable cooling systems, along with poor oversight, leave Americans with the same risk of multiple meltdowns experienced at Fukushima, Japan. We'll talk about how to make U.S. reactors safer for all of us.